Well, Sean, there's a lot going on in the National Hockey League as we're a month in. Welcome back from Finland, by the way. I hope the trip was nice for you.
It was. It was good. I just realized, though, that I got double whacked with the jet lag because we turned our clocks back while I was coming back. So it's only intensified the jet lag.
Well, I hope you're doing all right. I hope you can last through this podcast, at least.
I'll make it. Your dulcet tones will keep me alert.
I'm going to bring the energy for you, okay? So I'm going to actually throw it out to you. There's so much here going on. We got the St. Louis Blues really struggling. You got the Seattle Kraken playing very well. The Vegas Golden Knights riding a hot streak. By the way, I spoke with Bruce Cassidy, their coach, and we will play that interview for you shortly. Good stuff there from Cassidy. You got the Rangers and Islanders going in different directions a little bit right now after playing at Madison Square Garden last night as we record this Wednesday afternoon. Where do you want to go, Sean?
Well, I think I got to start with the St. Louis Blues only because they were kind of my dark horse to be in the hunt for the Stanley Cup championship. And now they're in the lottery. Which is not where I expect them to be. They're playing completely uncharacteristic St. Louis hockey. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago about Binnington, and I said, oh, you know, as long as he's pissed off, they're going to be okay, because that's what he needs. He needs that chip on his shoulder. He hasn't gotten any better. The team's gotten worse. This team isn't much different from last year's team. Perron's gone. You know, one or two other guys are gone, but that's it. It's the same team as last year, and they're just not playing St. Louis Blues hockey. They lose by an average of 2 goals a game. They have a minus 20 goal differential after 11 games, and they're tied for the worst record in all of hockey with the Columbus Blue Jackets, who I saw while I was in Finland, and they were showing, at least in game one, they were showing some signs of snapping out of whatever's ailing them. But I'm completely flabbergasted by the St. Louis Blues.
It's actually, and you're right. I mean, you look at their goal differential, you're right. If you average it out, it's 2 goals per game difference, but in this 8-game losing streak, they're a minus 26. They've been outscored 38-12. That's 3 goals a game, which is insane. And they did, you know, they did get off to a pretty decent start. They won their first 3 games, but now they've lost 8 in a row. They lost by 4 goals 4 separate times and by 3 goals twice. And the stats that kind of blow me away is this. Ryan O'Reilly, 2 goals, 0 assists, as we talk today on Wednesday, minus 12. Jordan Kyrou gets the big 8-year contract, 4 points, 3 goals, minus 17. I know we don't want to put a lot of stock in plus minus anymore around the NHL. That's the analytic buzz, is you don't take too much stock into that. You do when you're double digit minuses. 11 games into the season. And that's an incredible issue for this team. They're, you watch them play. Look at some of the goals that they're giving up, like no D zone coverage. You know, Colton Parayko just last night kind of lost high in the D zone, gets beat 3 seconds to go in a period. You give up a goal like that. And look, they're playing the Philadelphia Flyers, who are off to a good start, but they're far from world beaters. And they beat them 5-1. Look, I don't know where this goes in St. Louis right now. And far be it for Doug Armstrong knows what he's doing. And it's, I mean, Craig Berube didn't become a bad coach overnight. But I don't see how changes aren't made if this doesn't this continues down this path. And it's not what we're looking for here. And that's not what I think is the answer necessarily either. But hey, they've done it before, Sean, where they changed coaches in November. And what'd they do? They went and won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, look, I think the pieces are there. That's why I picked them to be, you know, a Final Four type of team. Like, they're, what's the one calling card that the St. Louis Blues have always had under Craig Berube? They're really, really hard to play against. They're not hard to play against right now. Teams are putting up 5 goals on them regularly. They're not paying the price. You know, you talk about Kyrou and minus 17, you add in what he's done offensively. He's been on ice for half the goals they've allowed this year.
Yeah.
Like, it's, that's incredible. Crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's absolutely nuts. And he's not a bad player. Like, it's just there's some sort of disconnect there. I don't know if they can't find that motivation that they need. They should. I mean, I covering that series last year, I think that they believed they could have beat the Colorado Avalanche if Jordan Binnington didn't get hurt. That's how good they were playing. You know, they played really well against Minnesota. They were giving Colorado a run for the money. I don't know if they beat them. Colorado's so deep and so fast. But St. Louis was frustrating them with the fact that Colorado couldn't get up the ice, right, without paying a humongous price. And when you do that over seven games, it becomes harder and harder, and you become more and more frustrated, and it takes more out of you. And that's what the Blues do every night. Like, that is their DNA, and it's not there. They're not a very difficult team to play against right now.
Yeah, no, and that, you know, is a reason why you start to wonder about changes and how they're going to be made, because it's not it's not personnel based. It's just not personnel based. But I got a question for this week's mailbag, and I'm going to throw it out at you because they were one of the teams in it. Was basically like, you know, you look at the last place teams in the league right now in all four divisions. Columbus, as we talk today, it's Columbus in the Metro, Ottawa in the Atlantic, St. Louis in the Central, and San Jose in the Pacific. And can any of those teams come back? Sean, do you still believe that the St. Louis Blues can find their way? Because when you go, you know, the question is valid at this point, because when you go on an 8-game losing streak, you really start to question everything.
Yeah, of course you question everything. But look, if you go 2-8 during a stretch in December, like, it's bad, but it's not the end of the world. Like, I just think there's such a small sample size now, and you're like, oh my God, this is horrendous. Nothing, we can't come back from this, right? But like, when you look at it, they're two games away from figuring it out, right? You look at Colorado before they went to Finland, and we were talking about what's wrong with the Colorado Avalanche. They win two games and they're right back where they need to be. They're sitting in a place where they can start to do some damage, and you know, they've played less games than everybody else, so they're still out of the playoffs. But you know, both Calgary and Chicago are 500, and you know, Colorado is far better than that. You know, and they're already in that third space in the Central, and they've played less games than everybody else. So, you know, for St. Louis, it's going to be tough, right? They got to make up 7 points already, with games in hand that they've already lost to Colorado. So, they just can't let it slide very much more. I mean, I honestly believe that this St. Louis team is a team that can run off 8 straight at some point. You know, if Binnington gets hot and they find their way, you know, and I look at Craig Berube and I'm like, if they're not going to listen to Craig Berube, who are they going to listen to? Like, I'd listen to that guy.
Well, he is.
I'd be afraid not to listen to him. He's like Rod Brindamore, right? Like, those are like the two guys you just kind of look at him and you're like, okay, A, you did this in this league. Like, you did it. You were a guy who was really good and you know, made things happen and is respected. And then B, you're tough as nails. You know, as a coach, like, who sits in their locker rooms and says, hey, you know what, I tuned this guy out, I'm not going to listen anymore. Like, I don't know that that's it. I honestly mean the whole thing, and I said it at the beginning, I'm flummoxed and flabbergasted by it.
Yeah. Well, if it doesn't turn around, they are going to be listening to a new coach. I mean, that's just the way things go in the National Hockey League. You know, that is. So you brought up Colorado, who you just saw in Finland. You saw them win two games. They played well, but they come back. Nichushkin's out now. Ankle surgery. We already know Landeskog's out. Helm hasn't played. They're banged up, man. They are banged up, and it is it's not good, obviously, ever to be banged up. You don't want to be banged up in the playoffs when you get there, for sure. But they have to fight through a little bit more adversity, I think, than they thought that they were going to have to. You know, you have to deal with a little bit of the hangover and whatnot. And you get a couple of wins in Finland and you hope to yourself, like, all right, that's a bonding trip. We turned it around. We're ready to go. Let's get off on our North American schedule again here. And here we go. We're going to put up a streak here that's going to get us right back up to the top of the standings, but it's going to be harder now. And from what you saw, I mean, Nichushkin's been off to a great start. Are they just going to have to continue to weather it a little bit longer now too?
They're a great team. I don't care who's out. Hey, I think Landeskog's close to coming back. Rantanen was unbelievable. You know, he was playing at home. He was juiced and you know, he had a great weekend. McKinnon was the MVP of the league this weekend.
Oh, yeah. He was terrific.
7 points. Like, and they weren't cheap points. Like, he dominated. He dominated both games. Like, when you have players like him and Cale Makar, you know, and you go as deep as they go in the blue line, you know, where guys in their third pair you would take, you know, as a two on some teams, you have the pieces in place to weather what's going to be a rough couple of months, because nobody had a shorter offseason than these guys, and nobody played harder than they did. They won the cup. They're going to pay the price for that all season and missing bodies. I mean, that's just the way these things happen. That's why it's so hard to repeat. But look, I, and this is no offense against the Chicagos and the Nashvilles behind them and whoever else you want to put behind them. They're not feeling a whole lot of pressure. Like, I don't think Colorado looks at it and says, oh, well, you know, Chicago's going to be with us all year, so we got to really put our foot to the pedal. Nashville struggled. I mean, they're another team. They're like St. Louis. I thought they were going to be really good. They you know, they're giving up goals at an unbelievable rate. I mean, UC Soros was a MVP, a borderline MVP candidate, and certainly a Vezina Trophy candidate. And, you know, he gave up 4 goals in the first period yesterday against St. Louis, 1 in the first minute. They were out of that game before the people even got settled into their seats. And it was stunning to watch. So, you know, I just don't think that Colorado feels that intensity, right? That there's no race right there right now. They know they can kind of coast. And even the teams ahead of them, like, do they believe in Dallas? Do they believe in Winnipeg? I don't know if any of us had Winnipeg as a first place team in their division when we started, and they've been really good. But I don't think Colorado feels any pressure with the players they have out now. It's not like, oh my God, we're not going to get these players back and we're going to fall out of the race. They know, you know, they play 550 hockey, which is what they're playing right now. They're golden.
Yeah, and Bowen Byram and Sam Girard are also out. Byram, I think, is week to week. Girard, day to day. We'll see what that is. But that hurts their blue line. But your point is well taken. It does make a lot of sense what you just said. And I don't say that lightly, and I don't say it kindly all that time either around you. But it makes sense because Nashville's not playing well. They're not putting any pressure on anybody. Minnesota, not playing well, not putting pressure on anybody. St. Louis, that's the biggest shock. They're certainly not playing well, as we've touched on. They're not putting pressure on. Arizona and Chicago are not going to be involved, I don't think, for very much longer. So you're right. Colorado's got some wiggle room here to deal with what they're going through right now. And that is, you know, obvious injury bug. But they did come off of back-to-back wins against Columbus. So maybe even with the injuries, they can get something on a roll here as they come back to start here. Before we get to the interview I did with Bruce Cassidy, coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, which is coming up shortly, Sean, I wanted to hit on the Seattle Kraken too, because you touched on the Predators, and it was the Kraken who gave it to them Tuesday night, 5-1, scoring 4 goals in the first period to run UC Soros out of the net. They've won 5 games in a row. Andre Burakovsky has been terrific. They don't have Philip Grubauer, and yet they continue to win. And I'm starting to wonder as we go through this, with the young players developing, Matty Beniers in particular, the infusion of some experience that you have last year. Yanni Gourde obviously was there, but, you know, he's still around, and Andre Burakovsky, a Stanley Cup champion twice. I'm starting to think that the Seattle Kraken might be legit in a team that could stick around here in this playoff race for quite some time, if not make it all together, because, you know, Calgary's struggling a little bit. I don't think they're going to struggle forever. Vancouver, still don't know what to make of them. Anaheim, San Jose, I don't expect much there. But Seattle is showing me something now, Sean, and you got to bank some points early if you're going to struggle a little bit later. They may hit that skid a little bit later, but they're banking them now.
It's a great story early on, and good for Dave Hackstall and good for the fans and Seattle to have a team that's competitive. You know, in year two, after expecting that in year one, they wanted the Vegas plan in year one, and that didn't come to pass. I don't know that it's going to come to pass in year two either. Again, like, you kind of think about the teams that are behind them, right? Los Angeles, what are they going to do? They were in the playoffs last year. They're going to be okay if they start to figure things out. They get their goaltending together. It's been really bad early in the year, but they had a shutout. Quick had a shutout in his last game, and you know, maybe they start to put things together. And there's Edmonton and Calgary, right, looming right behind them. And those are teams we talked about being in the Final Four. So, you know, there's teams there that Seattle has to hold off, unlike Colorado, who's sitting in a similar position in the Central. So, you know, I don't know that Seattle has the depth to ride this out. It's been a good 14-game start to the season for sure. But after 14 games, their goal differential is 9, right? And again, you don't put a ton of pressure in that, but you don't weigh that too heavily. But what it tells me is they're not blowing teams out. You know, look, they dominated Nashville, won 5-1 for 4 goals in the first period and, you know, look like world beaters. But they're not dismantling teams. They're not having easy nights, right? And over an 82 game season with a young team, an experienced team, a team that doesn't have a caliber goaltending, and I don't think that's an insult to say that they don't have New York Rangers goaltending, New York Islanders goaltending, Boston Bruins goaltending, Dallas Stars goaltending, whoever you want to bring up in that conversation, they don't have that. So I think, you know, until they prove me wrong, it's a little bit of a mirage. And we'll see the real Seattle when other teams start to figure things out. But they are doing themselves huge favors by putting themselves in the race as we get towards American Thanksgiving, which normally is a bellwether of what's going to happen. But it's a little different this year because we started a week later than normal. So maybe it's the first week of December where that imaginary line is, and it's become less relevant over the last couple of years with some of these teams that we've seen make big runs at the end of the year. So I'm still concerned about Seattle.
Yeah, I think that's legit as well. But you look at it too, the way they're playing, 5 wins in a row, they play their next 5 games are at home, 8 of their next 11 are at home. So they're in a good position here. They are scoring goals. And I think that's the key thing you have to look at. They're about 3.5 goals per game. I think their power play is at about 25%. For them, it's still about keeping it out, killing penalties, doing those things. They're going to be in it. They're going to be in it for a while here. Are they going to make it? Well, I'm not ready to say that. But they're going to be in it because they do. It looks a little bit like a mishmash, and they don't have that elite forward that you know other teams have. They don't have an elite defenseman. They don't have an elite goalie. It's a bit of a mishmash, but they have pieces there that I think are a little bit underrated. So I think they're going to be in it. You touched on the Rangers and the Islanders. We'll get to that on the other side, but let's get to our interview with...
Wait, before you get there, Dan, yeah. Two quick things. One, okay. It's a mishmash.
Mishmash, whatever. All right.
And then two, you know what the Seattle Kraken don't have? They don't have Connor McDavid. They don't have Leon Draisaitl. You know what they do have? 3 less goals than the Edmonton Oilers. Same amount of games.
They're scoring goals.
Yeah. So they have 50 goals in 14 games. The Edmonton Oilers, who we will all admit is the offensive litmus test of the NHL, has 53. And they're not struggling. Like, it's not like, oh my God, Edmonton can't score. Like, Seattle is scoring at an unprecedented pace for, I think, what any of us believe they would do with the talent level that they have.
Which is why they're going to, it's about defense and goaltending for them to be able to keep up. They're going to have to start getting more saves than they're getting. They're going to have to start playing better on the PK than they're getting. They can't be giving up 3 because they're not going to continue to score 3.5 to 4 per game. So, but unlike I think many of us thought, they're going to be a very interesting team to watch this season. And that's good for Seattle. Vegas is certainly a very interesting team to watch. So here is that interview that I did with Bruce Cassidy, the new coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, who have won 8 games in a row. Bruce, thanks for joining us. And I guess, you know, there's so much to get to with you, but I got to start right here. Are you the coach of the team, or is Little John the coach of the team?
Yeah. We brought in some help for this road trip and it's working out. He's our new offensive coordinator, I think we've called him. So.
That was a great skit. It was very well done. They do things well there in Vegas, so that's good. And it's probably what you're finding out too. So I'm curious from your perspective now with it, you've been there for a little bit. What have you discovered about A, this organization, and B, the hockey town that Las Vegas has now become?
Well, yeah, like a new team, you're not sure, but I got to tell you, it's a passionate fan base. Their first ever, you know, pro sports team that was their own. And I didn't realize how hockey mad they were out here. You see it in minor hockey rinks. You know, they sell the license plates, Dan. It's unbelievable. Like every seventh or eighth car that goes by has a Vegas Knights Golden Knights license plate. Like people are really into it here and they're talking hockey. So that part surprised me. I mean, I'd been here and played, so I saw how passionate they were with their fan base and how loud it was in the building and the show they put on before, but just in general. So that's the part that I guess sort of takes you a little by surprise when you come from such a sort of established market like Boston.
Yeah, and it's also, I think when people think of Vegas, and this has been going on now for a couple of years as we've been discovering, people think of Vegas, they think of the glitz and glamour of Las Vegas, but the hockey community in Vegas is not the glitz and glamour community. I mean, that's the touristy community. You've got real, legit, passionate, Vegas-based fans there. Have you found that to be true as well? You'll get the show and you'll get the tourists and celebs will come in every once in a while, but have you found it to be like, in those communities where you're living now, that it is that's where the fans are?
Yeah, and so about 20 minutes outside is Summerlin, right? And it's a big enough community, but everybody lives there, from the owner to the skate sharpener and everyone in between, right? So that's where our practice rink is. And then the Henderson rink is where the minor league team practices out of. So people are shuttling back and forth there. I know because both my kids are middle schooler and they both play hockey in the local Golden Knights team. So I run into a lot of people there and they're on the road. They're traveling a lot of weekends. There's tournaments going on. There's just a buzz from all day and all night from, you know, the fan base in Vegas and people from around there. They're traveling in to see the team. So I guess much more than I expected. You know, you're not sure how the minor hockey is, but they're up and coming here. Just kind of how the California markets grew. I can see that definitely happening in Vegas.
How has the family adapted? How have the kids liking it in the nice climate, the warmer weather? You know,
you're getting to appreciate that now, right? I think at first it was so damn hot in August. They start school in August out there, and it's 108 degrees, and it's like, ah, it's a dry heat. Yeah, it's still 108, you know, and for a Canadian like myself, I was like, man, this is tough, but I appreciate it now. You get up in the morning, you let the dog out, and you've got shorts on and maybe a sweatshirt, right, in November, so I think this is the time we all appreciate out there. Though they're good, they're adapting well. They missed their friends in the Boston area. They're making new ones now, so it's all good there.
The transition for you has to be helpful when you're winning games, and you guys are winning games right now. You've won 8 in a row. I'm curious, what do you see from this team? We know the talent, like that was the thing, right? We knew the team had a lot of skill and a lot of talent, but injuries really hurt the Golden Knights last season and they couldn't put it together. The chemistry couldn't come together. What have you seen here through the early stages of that coming together?
Well, as you said, we have a ton of balance, and last year that just injuries derailed them from that. And unfortunately for them, you know, it just caught up to them at the end of the year, but now you've got Eichel playing well and Stone and Stevenson, a real good line. But if for some reason they're not going, well, I shouldn't say not going, pucks aren't going in for them. Then you got the Misfits line that are on fire right now. We got a fourth line that really has created an identity for ourselves. Nick Waugh, Carrier, and Kolesar, they start most games and they play north and they're hard to play against. They're physical. They're scoring goals too, adding that part of it. So we're getting balanced up front. I think our D-Core might be the most underrated in the league, personally. You're in the East Coast for so long, you don't see a lot of the games later, and guys like Shea Theodore, how good he truly is. I mean, I knew Petrangelo, but Braden McNabb, Hagen, Whitecloud as a pair. I mean, we're rock solid back there. So there's really no weaknesses that people talked about our goaltending at the start of the year. Obviously unknown, but boy, they've given us a chance to win every night. We've played well in front of them, so I think it's just up and down the lineup. We're just good at each position.
Tell us a little bit about Logan Thompson, right? I mean, this is a guy who came out of nowhere and had a nice sample size last season, but it was small, right? So now it's still small for him, but that buzz is growing about him and what he's capable of doing and being a top goalie in the NHL. So what do you know about him now, his personality, how he handles it? You've worked with very good goaltenders, you know, in Boston. Tuca, obviously, being one. Jeremy Swayman came last year. What do you see in Logan Thompson?
He's got some of Swayman for sure. They're confident. They have great work ethic. I would say Logan's a little more athletic in terms of how his style of play versus Jeremy, that was a little more technically spot to spot. But both young guys that love coming to the rink, work hard at their craft, good personalities around the room. Guys want to play for them. So, so far, so good with Logan. He did have some good starts last year, and I think that helped him a lot going into this year. The guys believed in him, and that's half the battle, right? If you know the guys in there battling can help you win. So, you know, he's been really good in that regard. And we're not sure, because he's still early in his career, how's he going to handle it? It's, you know, let's get through some adversity, right? And see where, how that goes. But at the end of the day, like I said, nothing but good things to say about both goaltenders. But Logan, certainly with his story, and where he came from is great.
You know, it's interesting what you said. You know, he played last year and the guys got some belief in him because he did that. It's true, right? If guys don't believe in their goalies, doesn't it change the way they play?
Well, 100%. I mean, if they feel, I don't know how exactly it's going to affect them, but I know they're not going to be at their best. If they don't believe the goalie's there and battling or has the ability, whatever the case may be, I think they get away from the structure of how you're supposed to play as a group of five and then rely on the goalie if all the other areas break down. And I think that's what happens with teams that don't believe in their goalie. They either start cheating to score more goals or whatever it is. They don't want to do their part in the hard parts in D zone, knowing it doesn't matter. The guy's not going to make the save anyway. So that's tough when that happens. But in our case, we have two guys that our guys believe in, and it showed in the way we've played team defense.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you if you see that same belief in Aiden Hill, you know, among the guys on the team, because he's new. Like, they didn't know him from last year. He comes in, big body, fills the net, and, you know, has played well. Is he a guy that, A, that you're seeing that belief, but B, that you wanted because maybe he's a goalie that fits the model for the type of team and the team defense you want to play?
Yes, and again, there was no sample size with him, right? So he's going to have to earn that, whereas Logan had a chance to do that last year and did. So that would be the difference. Aiden comes into camp and is not as caught up maybe as Logan, but has done really well for us and played really well and solid out. And yes, he does fit. Sean Burke, you know, comes on as our goalie coach and had him in Arizona and thought that, you know, after we're talking this summer, how we're going to play, how we're going to defend, how it would be more predictable for the goalies, where shots are going to come from. He thought he would be a really good fit for us. Big guy, plays his angles well, controls rebounds, and he's been dead on with him. And I think Aiden's made some timely big saves as well, like every goalie has to, but in general, stop the pucks you're supposed to. And make hopefully those timely saves to help you swing momentum back to your team. So a good for Aiden for doing that. But yeah, it was a bit of an unknown for all of us, except Sean. So good call by him.
Do you sleep a little bit easier, Butch, knowing that your goaltending is holding up right now? Because that was the concern going into the season.
Yeah, I think, you know, me coming in brand new, like, it might have been more of a concern for the other guys because they were around it more and probably, oh boy, what's going to happen here? But when you come in new and fresh, you're excited about everything. The guys did speak highly of Logan. They were confident that he could. Now, I'm not saying he's going to, you know, play 65 games or anything like that, but they thought he would be a guy that could play at the NHL level. How many games is he going to play? We'll see. But so that always made me feel better. And that was going on maybe behind the scenes. So yes, of course, I think that's the one position that can sort of maybe force you to overcoach if you're not getting the saves. Now you're detailing everything, and I think that can get into the players' heads too. So that yes, I mean, I think every coach would tell you when you're comfortable with that position, it's a little easier for your rest of your game plan.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, so you're in Buffalo. That's where Jack Eichel came from, to the Vegas Golden Knights. He plays last year. You probably knew Jack a little bit from, you know, seeing him around Boston a little bit. I mean, he was at the Stanley Cup final when you guys were in it against St. Louis. He looks to me now like the Jack Eichel you expect to see. Is that what you're seeing as well?
I'll answer that in two parts. Yes, the offensive part. He's dominant through the neutral zone, strong on pucks. He gets hit and he really doesn't lose any momentum. His wrist shot is released, is second to none. Great vision. The part I guess I didn't know, the unknown, Dan, would be that is he willing to check in his own end to get pucks back? He's been unbelievable closing on that. Our center has a lot of responsibility from board to board. in the slot area, and he's done a great job of buying into that and closing quickly and getting pucks back, coming from underneath with, you know, coming late with speed underneath and getting pucks from his wingers has really benefited his game as well. So, I mean, both sides of the puck, he's been excellent. No complaints. And yeah, I knew him a bit in Boston. He skated in August with our guys a lot at Warrior, our practice rink. So I got to know him a little bit. He seemed like a real solid guy, and our skills coach had him for years, Kim Brandvold. So I had a bit of a connection with him, and I think that always helps going in. But at the end of the day, he's done his part more.
This might be more of a question for him than you, but I'll ask you anyway, because, you know, it went from, on Jack, it went from the end in Buffalo, which wasn't pleasant, the trade, the surgery, comes back, you know, the team isn't healthy. And it almost seems like you coming in and a brand new season just gave him a new lease on everything, could put all that stuff in the past and really almost restart, you know, where from where he was. Do you see that too? Is there a freshness to him because of that?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think, you know, the fact that he's 100% healthy is the most important thing. He feels good and he's out there every day and his body's responding to grueling nights and travel. Mentally, he's in a good place. The team's winning. Everything's not on Jack to be the best player every night. He's not first over the boards in every situation. He can just play his game. And I think the fact that he was around Boston and we won in Boston sort of got him excited. Like, hey, here's a coach that's got, has allowed his, you know, his players, Pasternak and Marchand of the world and Bergie to play to their strengths, but still, hey, he wants the team to play a certain way. And I think that's helped with Jack. We sat down in the middle of summer towards Cape Cod and kind of met for a good hour and a half. What do you expect from me? And here's what I'll be asking of you, Jack. And I thought it was a really good start for us. And so all of those things probably, yeah, he's probably thinking, okay, here we go. We're in it together. Let's get going. And what can I do to help you win? And it's been good. I really believe there's been some good interaction with Jack yet. You know, he's talking with his line mates more than anybody, and that's what you want to see, right? Players sort of, you know, communicating what they need to do and as much as anything.
And for you too, I want to ask you as well about, you know, a freshness to yourself. I mean, it's not like you never it's not like you ran out of energy, you know, in Boston, but I wonder if you are a little bit have been a little bit re-energized by a change.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look back at Boston, there's a lot of good years, and it's a city with expectations and should be, and you know, you're there every year in the playoffs grinding. You don't get the cup, and it's that simple. So it does put some pressure on you every year to get, okay, how can we get a little bit better? Where do we need to get better? And over time, that, you know, that push and intensity can wear on everybody. But at the end of the day, I still felt I had lots of juice left there to coach that team. It didn't work out that way, and I'm going to use that juice to coach this team. And there's expectations here too. Remember, Bill yeah. Foley came out and said, we're going to win the Stanley Cup in year six. Well, guess what? It's year six. So here, you know, time to get going. But, you know, that's where I'm at with it. But yeah, so now you got some different people in the locker room that are responding to your voice, and you want to make sure you do it right. I thought we had a great training camp. We really did in terms of getting things done. And I think it's translated to a good start.
Well, it certainly has. And Butchie, we really appreciate you jumping on with us. Thanks for the 15 minutes and
yep.
Let you go about your day. Continue the road trip. Continued success.
Okay. Thanks, Dan.
Who needs you, Sean? I did that by myself. I could do interviews by myself for this podcast.
We'll never have Bruce back again.
Oh, man. That's not very kind of you.
He already texted me. He's like, where the hell were you, Sean? I thought you were going to save me from Dan.
Well, that didn't work out in his favor. But no, good stuff there from Bruce Cassidy. They're off to a terrific start. So they are a good story. And he is also one of the best coaches to deal with in the National Hockey League. So happy to get him on. I touched on it, Sean, before you touched on it. And then I said we would talk about it after the interview we played with Cassidy. The Rangers and the Islanders, and how can you not throw the Devils in there too? The three New York area teams. I was at the Garden Tuesday night, Rangers up 3-1, going into the third period, dominated the second period, outshot the Islanders 17-6. The Islanders won the game 4-3. They scored 14 seconds into the third period, Adam Pellick, and then they got one from Brock Nelson on the power play, and then Anders Lee right in front of the net, wide open. Maybe there should have been a tripping on, on Oliver Wahlstrom. Wasn't called. Still got to cover the guy in front of the net, and the Rangers didn't do it. So there's two ways to look at this. One, the Islanders are playing really good hockey. They're coming back in games. It's not, you don't want to always do that, but it shows a lot when you can, and they've done it back-to-back nights against Calgary and against the Rangers, down 3-1 in the third period, came back to win both of those games. They're 9-5. They've won 7 of 8. We know how good their goaltending is, and their offense is coming around. Matt Barzal does no goals, but he has 15 assists, and I think in 14 games. You take a point per game from Matt Barzal, and that's what he's giving you. So that's one way you can look at it. The other way is the Rangers side. It's not going as well, right? They've blown leads now. 2-0 against the Red Wings, 3-1 against the Islanders. They're 6-5-3. They're scoring less than 2 goals per game at 5-on-5. And the unsaid thing around the Rangers, and nobody's really talking about it, is the fact that Igor Shesterkin has not been as good as the Rangers need him to be. His numbers are a 9-10 save percentage and 2.58 goals against, but he's got to play better. I mean, he's got to play up to his standard for the Rangers to be good, because that's how they're built, and he hasn't played that standard. He's not the reason that they're losing or inconsistent. He's not making the mistakes that lead to the goals, but he saved so many of those mistakes last season. He's not doing that now. So Islanders good, Rangers not so good. We'll touch on the Devils in a little bit. Your call. Where do you want to go with this one?
So what you're telling me is Igor's human.
He is a human being.
Yeah. So maybe they could help him out a little bit.
Yes. 100% they need to.
Like, I don't think Uzi Soros, and we talked about this at the beginning, like, I don't think he's a 4-goal first period kind of guy. And he didn't become really bad overnight. What's happened is he's not getting a ton of help, and his team's checking out in front of him. And it seems to me, you know, that to a degree is what the Rangers are doing. You know, they're giving up leads. They never did that last year. They were able to clamp down on teams. They're not scoring. They're not ever really getting that breathing room that you need, to kind of take it easy, and their defensive coverage in their own end has been horrendous. And that's not something that you see very often from a Gallant team. Usually they're pretty buttoned down. In the NHL, and I'm sorry, I love exciting hockey, and it happens on occasion, but not enough. You got up by 3 goals, you're done.
Yeah.
Pack it up and go home. When you lose a 3-goal lead in this league, you've done something horrendously wrong. You can look at the Islanders and say, oh, well, they're really good. They didn't give up. They didn't do this. They didn't do that. 3-goal lead with 20 minutes left to go, like, you're going to win 95% of the time.
Well, it was two goals.
At a minimum.
It was 2 goals, but still. It was 3-1. But, yes, your point is still, you're up 2 goals with 20 minutes to go. You should win the game 95% of the time.
Yeah.
Either way, 2-3. What doesn't matter? You got to win those games.
Yeah, so to me, it's more endemic of the team than it is of the goaltender. Do I have some concerns about Igor Shesterkin? Yeah, but I didn't think he was quite as good as everybody ordained him to be last year. Like, I thought he got a ton of help. The Rangers were one of the more disciplined and systematic teams in their own end. And Igor was great, but there were other goalies that I thought were in that stratosphere. And now he's come down a little bit to earth, and the Rangers have come down around him. And I think his quasi struggles have exposed some of the warts that people, when they look at the Rangers, wanted to ignore, right? They're not a very deep team. If you figure out how to take their top six off the board, you got a pretty good chance of success. They're a good defensive team. They're not a great defensive team. And they're relying on their power play.
They rely on their power play too much. Last season with Igor, he really was the big difference for them in the first half. They clamped down in the second half. They were way better in the second half of the season and in the playoffs than they were in the first half. He was enormous in the first half. But they have been and remain a power play-driven team. But you can be that. You have to be better. You have to be able to still produce 5-on-5. I don't think Mika Zibanejad has a 5-on-5 goal this season. The Rangers have scored 23 5-on-5 goals in 14 games. If you figure you need 3 or more goals a game to win, And you gotta probably, if you're lucky, you're getting one out of, you know, four power play goals. That's a really good power play. One out of four, 25%. You're getting one a game. You got to get over two goals per game at 5-on-5. And the Rangers are not close right now to doing that. They're not doing that, and it's a problem for them. And I think it's a bit of a reason also why they're blowing these leads. You know, like they're not able to build on. And, you know, they get up 2-0 against the Red Wings, can't build onto it. They lose 3-2 in overtime. They get up 3-1 against the Islanders, they can't build onto it. You lose 4-3. It's, yes, you're blowing them, but they're not generating enough 5-on-5. And that goes back to a point you just made. You're right. I don't think they're not that deep. They aren't. I thought they looked a little bit deeper against the Islanders when they moved their lines around and put Kreider actually down on a third line. But they still have a hole there. And Vitali Kravtsov came back. What's he going to be? I don't know. They still have some holes there that they're going to have to fill through the course of this season if they think they're going to be a dangerous team come playoff time. But I'll tell you what, let's flip it to the Islanders, because I mentioned Matt Barzal. He's got no goals this season, but he's got 15 assists. And Lane Lambert was talking about him pregame yesterday about how you don't really want him to change anything about the way he's playing. It's not about the goals for Barzal. It's about the creativity. It's about holding on to the puck, generating offense that way, playing a complete game. He has been doing that. And now the Islanders are scoring despite the fact that he has no goals. It doesn't matter. Would it matter, Sean, if he had 5 goals and 10 assists or if he has 0 goals and 15 assists? It's still 15 points. He's still helping to create 15 goals, right?
Yeah, for sure he is. But we all know players. Like, and even
they
guys
want to score, sure.
Even guys that want to be known as playmakers, right? Like, they want to score. They want to feel good. Like, everybody wants to score. Everybody wants to be the center of that celebration. I think about, you know, guys like Craig Janney and players like that who were just, you know, they were really known as playmakers. It was still nice to score. So nobody wants to look like a starting pitcher for whoever the worst team in baseball is, right? 1-14. You don't want to do that. So I think, you know, they say, oh, he can do that all he wants, but score at some point. Like, let's make this happen. And because you have to be dangerous both ways, right? You can't just be a pass first, pass second kind of guy. Eventually, again, as we go along the season, people are going to start to figure it out and lay you in a different way. But there's no question that he is an elite player and a player who's playing at a level that maybe he wasn't in the past. And if he continues to do that, they're going to continue to trend upward.
It'd be different for me with goals for Barzal if he was a consistent 30-goal scorer. He's not. He's consistent in the teens, 15, 16, 17, that type of thing. So he's not close to that, obviously, right now. And I think some goals will come for him. But, you know, it's about the production for him, points. He's giving them that. I said before the season, if Matt Barzal is a point-per-game player, the Islanders are a playoff team. He's a point-per-game player right now, and the Islanders are looking like a pretty good team. So no goals, but still a point-per-game player. Also with the Islanders, and now we can say a little bit of this, too, with the Devils, is they're getting saves, right? The Rangers, we expect to get saves. We touched on Shesterkin a little bit before. Not as good as last season, certainly not bad. But I think the Islanders have the best goalie tandem in the league in Sorokin and Varlamov. You got a guy in Sorokin who could start for just about any team in the league. And Varlamov probably can start. There's probably about 6 or 7 teams that would take Semyon Varlamov right now, if not more, as their number one goaltender. And that gives you the best goalie tandem in the league. And I think the Islanders are playing a little bit more to that, understanding that they can push a little bit offensively because they have great goaltending. And you're seeing them score a little bit more as a result.
Yeah, they look different. Like, they look like they want to go forward a little bit more. They're not sitting back. They're not sagging. They're not, you know, just trying to bang off the counterattack and win a game 2-1. No, like we just talked about with the Rangers, like the Islanders, if you were down 3-1 in the third period to them, you were losing. Like, just go put some money on the money line
right
for the third period and you're going to win, but you're going to get really bad odds because it just doesn't happen. That still doesn't happen, but they go forward a little bit more and it's no longer, you know, like it maybe had been for the past 3 years, even when they were good and they were going to the conference final. Like, if they were down 2 goals in the third period, just forget about it. Like, we'll wait and we'll try and win tomorrow because there's no way we're scoring 3 and 20. And that's certainly not the case anymore. You know, they're scoring 3.5 goals a game. They're certainly a little bit different under Lane Lambert than they have been in the past couple of years. And we'll come to see if that's a good thing as we go forward. It certainly hasn't been a bad thing so far.
What's also different, we can't go this entire podcast and really give the Devils their due, because if Vegas is the team of the Western Conference right now and Seattle's the story, New Jersey is the team of the Eastern Conference right now and the story. They've won 7 in a row. They keep going and they're getting saves, Sean. Like, that's they're finally getting saves. And it doesn't help them that Blackwood's obviously out 3 to 6 weeks with his injury. That hurts. Palat's out too. That's a problem. But right now they're getting saves. They're fun. They're energetic. They're fast. That is one of the fastest teams in the league. This NHL is a fast league. Every team plays fast. The Devils are playing at a speed that I haven't seen them play at in a long time. And that's made a huge difference. To me, I still, though, maybe it's because I just can't give them the benefit of the doubt because it's been so long since they've been able to establish something there in New Jersey. It's like, I still got to see another 20 games. I have to see another 20 games before I can really say, oh man, these Devils are legit.
Yeah. Well, it's the Buffalo syndrome, right? Like,
yeah,
we every year you're like, oh, look at Buffalo. What a nice, fun team. They finally figured it out. And then 40 games into the season, you're like, oops, I got on that bandwagon a little too early. So my son every week, he's like, Dad, you have the Devils too low in your Super 16. Like, they're a wagon.
You do.
When are you going to bring them up? And I don't believe yet. And I want to believe, like, when the Devils are good, it's good for hockey in New York. And that people will laugh at me and people will say, well, it's only the Rangers. I don't think that's true, because I think you need teams to challenge you, right? You need the Islanders. You need the Devils. You need the Flyers. The Rangers stir the drink for sure, New York hockey wise. But if they don't have local close rivals that are playing well, it's just not as fun. And right now, look, I mean, you say, oh, the Devils get the saves, and they do. And Vanacek's been really good for them. But you know what? Their goalies haven't been asked to make saves. They give up nothing.
They've been great.
They give up 24 shots a game.
Yeah.
They average 38 shots a game. I think they have the widest differential. Florida is averaging 40 shots a game. But I think they're giving up a little bit more. So
more than the Devils.
Yeah. So they're playing fundamentally, right? And I think everybody, probably us included, owes Lindy Ruff an apology. And I don't think I said anything bad about Lindy Ruff. I know I said some bad things about Mackenzie Blackwood, and he ended up getting hurt. So I don't know that I need to apologize to him yet. But just in general, a little apology for the Devils. After two games, we were ready to write their old bit. And talk about, you know, the pressure that's on Lindy Ruff and, you know, all that stuff. And then we're 11 games down the road and they're the class of the East. So sorry, Lindy.
are you going to apologize too, Sean? Because let's talk about this real fast. You have them 8 in your Super 16. I have them 3 because of what they've done. This season. This is about this season.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't think we're deep enough into this season for it to just be this season. I don't.
It's different philosophies. Different right? philosophies.
Like, are the Winnipeg Jets the sixth best team in the league? Do you have them at 6? Do you have Seattle at 5? Again, this is the argument we always get into. Like, Super 16, we just take the top 16 teams, maybe move one around. Oh, they're in 16th place, I'll move them to 13th. They're in first place, I'll move them to third. Like, what are we doing? Like, there has to be some projection, right? And there has to be some, okay, if the season ended today and these teams played, right? Like, who's going to win? Or are the New Jersey Devils going to beat the Edmonton Oilers in a 7-game series? Are the New Jersey Devils going to beat the Carolina Hurricanes in a 7-game series? No. Are they going to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs in a 7-game series? I don't think so. Like, so for me, I just keep on thinking about the Buffalo conundrum of, you know, are you going to show this to be 40 games in? And then B, I look at some of these teams that haven't gotten going yet. And I'm like, the Tampa Bay Lightning, perfect example. Is this New Jersey Devil team beating the Tampa Bay Lightning in a 7-game series? God, no.
It's different philosophies.
You really think they're the third best team in the league right now?
Right now, they're playing like the third best team in the league. They are. They're. You mentioned it before. They're generating a ton of shots. They're not giving up much. They're winning games. They're getting saves. They're fast. They're all over the ice. They're generating a lot of scoring chances. They're playing like the third best team in the league right now. Well, we'll see on the Devils. But speaking of them, and it's obviously sad news now. Peter McNabb was with the Devils for a while, recently with the Colorado Avalanche as a broadcaster, passed away. We knew he was dealing with cancer. He was able to, and great for him, see the Avalanche's run, be there for it, be there for the parade, be on TV for the parade, really enjoy and celebrate that, because he's been there through all the thick and thin in Colorado, really became a household name in Colorado, and he passed away. So terribly sad news in the NHL community to see Peter McNabb. There's a lot of really good guys in this league, Sean. There's a lot of really good guys in hockey, but this guy, I'll say it, was one of the really good ones.
He was one of the best, and he's been a part of my hockey journey from being a little kid, right? He was one of those, talk about underrated. He was one of those underrated players on the Bruins when I was a teenager, where you just watched him play and he played with such class and grace, and you mm-hmm. were like, and on a team that wasn't very classy or graceful. And I don't mean that in a bad way. They were a mean, ornery team. And you know, McNabb played a really graceful, understated game, and I loved watching him play. And then, you know, I move here and I start covering the Devils, and Peter was with the Devils. He was doing some announcing, and it was like a master class, right? It was like a master's level college class to sit in the old Continental Airlines Arena, very close to the ice, and watch a morning skate and just pick Peter's brain. And he'd willingly do it. He would sit there and he would give you all the information you wanted. And it was just, God, I feel so blessed that I got to do those things. And I didn't see him as much later, you know, when he went to Colorado, you'd see him when they came in, or, you know, during playoff runs and stuff like that. But there's a lot of people I always want to see when I go to the rink. There are very few that were higher than Peter and his whole family. It's an American hockey family, right? Max was the GM at one point with the Devils, you know, and just great people. And it's sad. And, you know, it's another reminder as we go through Hockey Fights Cancer Month, that it's just not about colors and events and stuff like that. This is something that affects so many people, and it just sucks. And you know, I hope that Hockey Fights Cancer makes a difference, and you know, that someday soon we find a cure and people don't have to go through this anymore. But I know, and I said this the other day on Twitter, like, hockey's a worse place without Peter in it. So
it is. I used to love going to the game. Like, he was the guy that when the Avalanche came to town, if I hadn't seen them for a while, he was the one that I would approach at a morning skate and be like, fill me in. You know, and he did for the entire 30 minutes of the Avalanche being out on the ice, 25 minutes. He was just telling stories and talking about the team and who's doing this and who's doing that. And here's what I see and all that. And I mean, the guy had so much knowledge, and he was the guy that, you know, he was omnipresent. I mean, he was always there. He was always around there for, I think, every season of Avalanche hockey. So he will be sorely, sorely missed. There is no question about it. So our thoughts go out to him, his family, and everybody.
He's a Hall of Famer, Dan, whether he's a Hall of Famer or not. Yeah. He's a Hall of Famer, and we're at that time, right? Hall of Fame weekend is this weekend. I leave for Toronto on Thursday, ring ceremonies on Friday, all the other events over the weekend, and then Monday inductions. Really good class. Really, really good class. I'm kind of looking forward to it, even though I've only gotten 3 days at home between Finland and 4 days between Finland and Toronto. So, but really looking forward to it. It should be a great weekend.
It's a Swedish heavy class. The Swedes will be represented in Toronto.
I thought you were going to say it's a Swedish heavy metal class, and then I was even more excited.
No, I mean, with Daniel and Henrik Sedin, you know, and Daniel Alfredsson, I mean, this is a Swedish heavy class. I won't be there. Hall of Fame weekend's a lot of fun. It is. And you hear a ton of stories. We get to tell a ton of stories. So, and then all of our coverage is on NHL.com. It's now. We've got feature stories and more to come, and you will be there. I think Nick Kotsenik will be there, and Mike Zeisberg will be there all the way through Hall of Fame weekend. And then, of course, at the end of it, there's general managers meetings on Tuesday as well.
I got to give one quick plug before we go. Look, we have it covered front to back. We have exhaustive features on every player that's going in the class this year, the builder, everything. But the one thing that we do, I think, that is cooler than almost anything else we do is we do testimonials for each of the Hall of Fame inductees each year. And we try and get somebody who's really important in their life to do them. And they're amazing. Like, you did the Sedins and you got Brian Burke to do the testimonials. He was the GM who drafted them, who engineered the trade to draft them. One of the best testimonials that I've ever, ever read. Burke's a beauty. You know, you knew it was going to be good. But I think Mike Zeisberg is getting Sundin to do Alfredson. Corey Schneider did Roberto Luongo. So, and they're amazing because they're a look from somebody who made that journey with them or who had a huge impact on that journey. And it's a viewpoint that no matter how much you talk to a player, no matter how much you report, you're never going to get. And there's something that nobody else has. And I'm really proud of them.
Yeah. The Burke one is terrific. The best line in it is he's talking about Thomas Gradin, who is the Swedish scout who went to him and said, you've got to find a way to get both of them, Daniel and Henrik. And Brian Burke's response to him was, do you need a urine test? And that is in the testimonial along with so much else. So follow all of our Hall of Fame coverage. And next week when we do the podcast, Sean, we will talk about the next class for the Hall of Fame. And we will have debates on who should be in that class, as we are also doing on NHL.com as well. So lots to discuss next week as well. We did a lot this week. Maybe by the time we talk next, Sean, this, as we led off the top here, maybe by the time we talk next, the St. Louis Blues will have ended their losing streak.
Yeah, maybe. And I'll have the New Jersey Devils in the top three, just like you.
There you go. Where they should be. So right now for this season. Anyway, thanks for listening and enjoy the hockey.